Welcome. Nothing new in the stars immediately since last week. We talked about, does anybody have any Mercury retrograde experiences? I think Heathrow
and Mercury. All the petrol stations. Airports in England went down for a couple of days. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. They canceled a lot of flights. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other Mercury retrograde stories?
I just had a weird one person who I was trying very hard to communicate with, and he always, you know, was arriving in some kind of weird script. It turns out it was a virus in his computer, but I ended up giving up. It's just impossible.
You don't get viruses with a Mac.
So
I
always fear,
do you know?
No. I started using Macintosh in 1984, the year they came out. I've only ever owned Macs. I've used PCs over the years belonging to others. I never bought one. And I've never had a virus, ever.
I don't know anyone with a Mac that's ever had a virus, either.
Only, that's a PC thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a Mac thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't often speak out about what I'm going to speak out about for a few minutes, but My guru, my spiritual master, Bhaktivedanta Swami, left the planet in 1978, which is a long time ago. And in my estimation, he's a pure soul. There are no stories, or there is no evidence of his ever having misbehaved, so to speak. What he said, he did. What he did, he said. It was always one and the same thing. He wasn't working the angles from any time that I was connected with him or to him. Nor did anybody, other people connected to him or who knew him better than I, because I didn't get to spend much time with him ever. There were never any reports of misbehaving, saying one thing, doing another. And one of the things he would always caution against, he would simply call it, this is a world of the cheaters and the cheated. And many people will search for spiritual life, for a spiritual connection. And they'll mistake almost anything to be a legitimate spiritual connection, because somebody is posing as a spiritual person or having a spiritual whatever background, tradition, something on offer. And it's not to say that these people don't want spirituality, but there's also a qualification that's required to experience higher states of God consciousness and of spirituality. Many people, you know, I was involved with New Age thinking since 1969, long before the term New Age was ever coined. I was into spirituality long before it became fashionable or trendy myself, as were others. And then this whole new agey-wagey thing happened, which in many ways is a good thing, because more people have approached a spiritual path. But to believe that anything and everything is cool or is God conscious or somehow representative of the truth is naive at best. And this one can anchor in this ray, and that one does this and that one does that, and this one channels so and so. Well, who is so and so? Where did they come from? Just because somebody is jumping into the body and starting to speak, usually in a voice that doesn't sound like a human, and in this way, so then we know he's present. I've been to these sessions with the famous channelers. I lived in California. It's all there. It was all there. I used to sit right here like you do in the sitting room of Louise Hay and sit at the feet of this woman who's the genuine article. Not New Agey-Wagey. This is a woman who's lived it, is it, and you feel it when you're with her, for example. You have to be very cautious and not be gullible and believe anybody and everybody that tells you this is this and that's that and off we go. And don't just accept things at face value. You need to ask questions, and you need to, in some cases, you need to investigate. My guru was, how shall I say? He did not suffer fools, never mind gladly, not at all. Not at all. And if he knew somebody was a cheater and was misrepresenting, he'd just call it what it was. He'd never hold it back out of politeness or out of courtesy. I'd be far more polite and courteous than he would have been. And his point of view was, these people are being misled or cheated and misdirected, and they need to be told the truth. Why? How does it work? Cheaters can only draw in those who are willing to be cheated. I don't want to say this. I have to be careful how I use my words, because I don't want to offend anybody. And I know, you know, many people are sincere, but sometimes they don't realize what real spirituality is about. Real spirituality is surrender to God, period. That's what it is. Real spirituality is not, how can I organize better sense gratification for me? Or how can I get everybody to think that I'm, see how advanced I am? Of course, this is the first snare. As soon as you have a little bit of advancement in spirituality, you begin to see that you have a little advancement, and then right away you think, well, geez, you know, I'm pretty advanced. Boom, down you go. Well, that's how that works. But it's not so much that you consciously want to be cheated, but you may not know what's real and what isn't real, what is true and what isn't true. And in this new age movement, there are very, I've said this in the past, there are very, very few people who really know what they're doing. You know, that are genuinely capable. If it takes 2 1/4 days to be a Reiki master, you know, well, there are a lot of Reiki masters out there. Because I've met them, they've introduced themselves as Reiki masters, having taken 2 1/4 days of Reiki. Don't know, I haven't met a lot of masters after 2 1/4 days in any discipline of life, what to speak of, healing. So, you know, this is being duped. Even to speak like that, there's an illusion that is taking place. Yeah, I mean, I don't fault anyone for wanting to become a master. I, for example, have done Vedic astrology for 31 years. I know this much about Vedic astrology. I've done thousands of charts around the world. And I don't for one minute think I'm even anywhere near to being a master, because I'm not.
Now go on, Jeff.
No, I'm not. I'm not. You can ask me a question and I can calculate the answer astrologically and give you an answer that would be fairly accurate most of the time. But I can take you to a guy in Bangalore, India, and you sit down and you write your questions on a piece of paper, you put them in an envelope, you seal it, you set that envelope down. And he says, now, your questions, you're just about to open your mouth and tell him what your questions are. He goes, I will tell you your questions. And then he tells you all your questions, exactly what they are. And then he takes the envelope and he rips it open and he says, oh yes, correct, those are your questions. Now, for the answers. That's a master.
When you bring him here.
Yeah. This guy has like 100 people in his waiting room.
Was that the one that did the, he was taught the kid by his dad? And what was it again? They had to do question charts.
His grandfather. No, this is several generations. His grandfather would go, what's in my hand? And he'd make a calculation. So, okay, let's see now. Jupiter is here influencing, so it's round. And Mercury's influence here, so it's green. And Mars' influence there, so it's burnt. So you're holding a round candle, green candle, that's been burnt. There it is. That's a master. I can't do that. That's approaching mastery. Okay? These things are worlds apart. This is a several generation family, you know. Brahmin family. Anyway, my point is, one must qualify oneself, like for anything, you know. And we're too easily led. We're too willing to jump on somebody's bandwagon, you know, that such and such is this or it's that. Most people are good people, but the intent oftentimes among healers is they're acting out of ego. And they're showing you how much they know. And how good they are. Or I can fix you. Or you should listen to me. That's ego. That's not pure intent. It's dangerous. People like that also then start telling people what they need to do. You know, you need to go to South Africa for 2 months. Shut down your business. Because you need to sort this out. Okay. You got to go to Rome right away. I do. Yes, you do. You might say, well, it might be good for you to go to Rome for these reasons. Consider it. You need to go to Rome. Book your ticket. That's a whole different thing. You know? You got to be careful. Because the intent is not always the right intent. You may think it is, but it isn't. So, there's a handful of people in the New Age movement who really are capable. A handful. Believe me. I was in Los Angeles, where it all went down. I was there when John Gray, women are from Venus, men are from Mars. There's John Gray standing there. There's his wife, the little Italian one, who also did several books. Barbara DeAngelis. There's Louise Hay. You know, I met all these people. I was there for all this stuff. I'm not criticizing that. I'm just saying it's a whole different background when, you know, you've been exposed to it like that. And then you find people who are trying to manipulate others. Many people in the New Age movement are only doing it because there's money in it. That's the only reason they're doing it. Well, is there a buck in it? Oh, okay. Let me go do that. I can give you a list of those.
Remember that one particular guy that he'll try any job, even in bugs.
He came to see me, this guy, and he says, and you know, he's a healer. He's a healer. He's a reader. But he came to see me and he says, well, my wife wanted me to come and see you. He says, I don't believe in any of this. You don't believe in any of it? Nah, I don't believe. I says, yeah, but you do these readings for people. Yeah, you know. Entertainment. You know. It's a few bucks. If you work it right, you know, you can get big groups. You know what I'm saying? Really? You know, we got onto the website of, I like to call him Sci-Fi Baba, this past week. Sai Baba. Now, I've known about Sai Baba since the early 70s. And there are several videos on YouTube which shows all his little magic tricks and how he does them, because they slow the film down and they actually show it to you. And he takes a little tablet size piece of ash and he sticks it in between his fingers like this, and he does, then he goes like this and he crushes it with his thumb, and then he tells him, he goes like this and puts ash in people's, or he goes like this and then he ash, it's always ash, and then he burps up these eggs. He goes like this. He has the egg in his golden eggs in the napkin, and he goes like this, and he takes the egg and he goes, and his mouth is barely open long enough to get the egg out. In other words, it's in the napkin. And he goes like this. And then there's one where he's searching underneath this
trophy,
trying to get out the thing, you know, so he can grab the thing because it's already been set there. And not to get into the pedophile side of that. You know how many people follow Sai Baba? Millions.
Mm.
Millions.
Half Australia.
I mean, I've been to Australia 7 times. I know the Aussies. I love them well. They're all into Sai Baba. If you say to an Aussie they're going to India for spirituality, there's only one place they're going.
That's
to see Pataliputra. What do they call it? Patali. Yeah, to see Sai Baba.
I Okay.
Yeah, Sai Baba is the best thing to do with a guy like Sai Baba is to avoid him at all costs. Mm-hmm. That's the best thing to do. And anybody who thinks Sai Baba is where it's at has made a grave mistake.
Is, while all this is going on, they're chanting, you know? Mm-hmm. They're chanting genuine mantras, you know, but it's
magic, magic tricks doth not God make.
Mm. I remember when I didn't hear one point manifest these big rings, because when I was living in Fintorn, some people came back with rings and were blown away by the fact that this kind of really was fully man. And I remember thinking, how would you fall for somebody who just manifests things? Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. And what do objects have to do with spirituality? You know, maybe if he made a Rolls Royce appear out of nowhere on the spot, but he doesn't do Rolls Royce.
Osho,
yeah, Osho had 108 Rolls Royces, but they were manufactured in England, so it's a little different. Anyway. The cheaters and the cheated. You must qualify yourself for spirituality. To see God, you must qualify yourself to see God. You must become pure. You must work on yourself and develop godly, godlike, saintly qualities to see God. You can't just go and see the king. You have to be qualified. You have to have an appointment. There must be some business. Mm-hmm. Not anybody can walk in and see the king at any moment. So a qualification is necessary. And if you qualify yourself, then things will work out. And you will be able to see that and see through all this other nonsense. Another thing that we've been exposed to repeatedly, is all these avatars. Avatar is a Sanskrit word. It comes from the Vedas, nowhere else. Avatar means one who descends. It means it's an incarnation of God or a specifically empowered jiva, which means a jiva is a soul like us. We're jivas. A specially empowered jiva who's come on a mission is an avatar. All avatars are prophesied and predicted in the Vedas. So if there's an avatar, you can go look it up. Because it was written there before they arrived. And if Joan...
Well, he's a self-proclaimed avatar, isn't he?
Who? He calls himself God.
Himself from a very early age.
I don't know about... Yeah, self-proclaimed, yeah.
Since he was 7 or 8 or something, he's
self-proclaimed. Yeah, he knew magic tricks from the age of 7 or 8, so I guess that's good. avatar means... You can't just... They ascribe this term avatar to Tom, Dick, and Harry. You know. Joan Nihuilahan is not necessarily... an avatar.
Can't say
so. I just made her up. Well, she's about as much as an avatar as other people that we've been told were avatars recently. Be careful. Be careful. Don't buy into this nonsense. And just because somebody's arriving and they're from such and such and this and that, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't. And don't get caught up in, you know, this wide-eyed stuff just because everybody else has jumped on the bandwagon. You know, use your discretion, use your discrimination.
And the thing is, the more people follow these, so the more they feed that particular person's energy. So it's,
That's a good point.
They end up having a collective, a collective junkie group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people will feed off of you and suck you dry. Feed your energy, so they'd be like energy vampires. You know, or they'll do it with Osho, big money. I'm talking big money. Maharishi, Transcendental Meditation Movement, had a group of people. I don't know what he called them, his million-dollar club or whatever he called them. And they had the special privilege of going to Flow Drop in Holland, where the Maharishi has his European headquarters, where he lived at least part of the time. And for $1 million a head, one for a person, you could go hang out with him for a month.
Wow.
This is the $1 million club. A million, right? The accommodation was a freight container. Like they stick on board a ship. That was what they had converted a freight container into, some kind of a cabin.
I know three people who did.
And that's what they said. They couldn't even build them accommodations. They couldn't even give them a hotel room.
And they had
freight
containers. They had four of these separate monthly sessions with 30 people.
Yeah.
So the 30 or 40.
So that's 30 million
times
four a month. And the one particular one that we heard about, well, first it was the guy never even got to see the Maharishi. He was supposed to get intimate association with his guru, which is why you want to be there if you're a disciple. And the Maharishi was either couldn't be arsed, couldn't be bothered, or he wasn't feeling well, or maybe he wasn't there. I don't know. He didn't see them.
He told them through television screens.
No, they showed him old movies, I thought.
That's what we were joking.
Okay. So they didn't get to see him in person. They didn't get the darshan. Darshan means personal audience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You all know darshan from Amachi, etc.
And they all paid $1 million.
Oh, they went back a second time.
Because they're that stupid.
Yeah. Now, see, this guy is a seller of mantras. Deepak Chopra is a seller of mantras. You don't sell mantras. In the Vedas, nobody sells mantras. Mantras are not for sale. Mantras are given. Deepak Chopra split off from Maharishi. So, that's the reality. Use your discretion. Don't just jump on the $1 million container bandwagon.
Twice.
Take oil tycoons and everything.
Now, if somebody told you they got to go see their guru and live in a container for $1 million, what would you tell them?
We can first go to Formula.
But you know this, you'd think something like this would be so obvious. Like, are you kidding me? Especially millionaires, because these guys would be successful business people.
Yeah, yeah.
So they would be used to seeing through the BS, would they not?
Maybe they inherited it.
You see? So, okay, I've said my piece on that one.
Get
that out.
Stop the recording and have a real conversation.
Yeah, I say it when I move to say it, so. Okay. That's the Brahma Samhita. They discovered this book by accident. It's an old Shastra, Vedic scripture. I can't remember where they discovered it. It probably says in the beginning. But they only found one chapter. Chapter 5. And that's chapter 5, right there. Now, as you remember, in the creation depiction in the Vedas, talked about Brahma being born from the navel of Vishnu. And Brahma is the creator. He appears on the lotus flower. The filament or the stalk comes out of the navel of Vishnu, who's lying on Shesha, the serpent couch, in a state of yoga nidra, mystic slumber, and he's imagining, envisioning, dreaming the universe, the creation of the universe. And the stalk comes up from his navel, Vishnu, the lotus flower blossoms, and Brahma, whose job it is to create all the diversity in the material universe, appears. And what's he see everywhere?
Nothing.
Darkness. Nothing. On coming out of the lotus, Brahma, being guided by divine potency, turned his mind to the act of creation under the impulse of previous impressions. But he could see nothing but darkness in every direction. Under the impulse of previous impressions, what does that tell you about your own birth? Once you become self-conscious, conscious of yourself as a baby, you will turn your mind to creation, to making stuff happen in your life, like sticking things in your mouth, for example, at that stage, screaming and seeing what happens, who comes, filling your pants, whatever it might be. But under the impulse of previous impressions. So what does this tell us? It tells us that in this life we pick up where we left off under the impulse of previous impressions. Whatever your consciousness was in your previous life, you know, it's like the iPod. Life ends. Next life? Next life? Oh yeah, vaguely familiar. Right? Okay.
We've been reduced to iPod status.
Purport. Brahma's impulse for creation arises solely from his previous impressions. All jivas, who are jivas?
Souls.
Get their nature conformably to their impressions of previous births, and accordingly, their activity can have a beginning. It is called the unseen, or the result of one's previous deeds. His natural impulse is formed according to the nature of the deeds done by this soul in the previous, in this case, Brahma, in the previous kalpa. Kalpa is a lifetime of Brahma. Some of the eligible jivas also attain to the office of Brahma in this way. Remember, we said that you can attain to the position of Brahma should you want it. Then, the next verse. Then the goddess of learning, Saraswati, I don't know how she comes into this when there's nothing there. Maybe it's within, not sure. The divine consort of the Supreme Lord said thus to Brahma, who saw nothing but gloom in all directions, O Brahma, this mantra will assuredly fulfill your heart's desire. It will solve your problems. It will resolve the conflict. What is the mantra? Klinkashnaya Govindaya Gopi Janavallabhaya Swaha. That's the mantra. Purport. This mantra, consisting of the 18 divine letters prefixed by the Kama Bija, is alone super excellent. What is the Kama Bija?
King.
Correct. What is a Bija? Bija is a seed or seed mantra, Bija mantra. When you get initiation in TM, they give you a Bija mantra. You come to me, I give it to you for nothing. No 5,000, no 3,000, no 300, nothing. Free. Whichever one you want, we'll give to you. I'm not saying that's what I do, but these are all available. They're readily available. Kama means desire, fulfillment of desire. The Bija mantra for Kama, fulfillment of desire, is kling, kling. That's it. It has a twofold aspect. One aspect is that it tends to make the pure soul run after the all-attractive Sri Krishna, the Lord of Gokula and the divine milkmaids. This is the acme of the spiritual tendency of jivas. The apex, the utmost point. When the devotee is free from all sorts of mundane desires, and willing to serve the Lord, he attains to the fruition of his heart's desire, namely the love of Krishna. Well, you could study that sentence for the rest of your life, honestly. Because what is, everybody is riddled with desire. That's what we're all doing here. We are all here. I said this to Clindy the other day when we were driving the city center. We stopped at a light and I said, you see all these people? Every single one of them has an agenda. Everyone. Everybody's here with their own personal agenda. And none of it includes God, by definition. It's all ego-based and ego-driven. How can I get my senses satisfied today? In what way can I fulfill my desires today? It has little or nothing to do with God. Because if it did, you wouldn't be here, by definition. That's why you're here. You're put here because you don't want God at the center. If you wanted God at the center and were willing to keep God at the center and God's desires at the center, you wouldn't be here. So all of us have an agenda. That's clear.
That's it then. That's
yeah.
The beginning and the end.
That's it. Now, so we're busy trying to fulfill various desires. All well and good. When you're done with all that, when the devotee is free from all sorts of mundane desires, when does that happen? Generally after thousands of lifetimes. Thousands. Not a couple of hundred. And becomes willing to serve the Lord. Spirituality isn't getting God to fulfill your desires. That's not spirituality. That's fulfillment of your desires. That's material life. Is there something wrong with it? I'm not judging it as being wrong or as being bad. It just has nothing to do with spirituality. That's all. Spirituality is, dear Lord, what do you need today? What do you want? How can I be an instrument? How may I serve you today? What is the best use of my time and energy today for you and for others? That's spirituality. Who thinks like that? A handful of people, perhaps. Right? Doesn't mean we should get on ourselves because we're not there yet, but we should call it what it is. So, when you're willing to serve God, then, he says, he attains the fruition of his heart's desire. Well, wait a second. I thought the fruition of my heart's desire was a new Mercedes. I was sure that's what it was. Yeah, when you're connected to bodily consciousness, it can be this, that, the other thing, whatever it might be. But when you're beyond your desires, and even still within the scope of mundane desire, what is the highest thing available for you in the material world that you all want? That we all want. What is it? Love. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's love, isn't it? What we wouldn't give to be loved and to be able to love. It's all about love. And without love, no matter what you do, it has an emptiness. There's something missing. I can go to a movie, it can be a wonderful movie, I can be thoroughly engrossed in it, but it's not near as good is when I have somebody to share it with. It's way better. It's the same movie. Why is it like that? It just is. We're made that way. So it's love. So we try to fulfill our heart's desire, love, down here. If you're a guy, you want a girl. If you're a girl, you want a guy. You know. Now, you want that loving relationship. You want friends. You want loving relationship with friends. You want it with family. You want it with parents and brothers and sisters. And we all do. We want all with 2 mutts in the kitchen.
2 hens in the back garden.
2 hens in the back garden. And 2 horses up the road. You know, we want it however we can get it. We want love. That's the heart's desire. So the ultimate heart's desire must be then love with God. Simple. 1 and 1 equals 2.
Yeah, but you get so distracted by other things because you can physically see them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
It's very hard to keep your mind on something that you can't see.
Absolutely right.
That's the big task.
But in the case of the devotee who is not of unmixed aptitude, this super excellent mantra fulfills his heart's desire as well. So what's he saying there? He's saying whether your devotion is pure or mixed. There's another verse in the Bhagavatam, it's a beautiful verse. Akama sarvakamova mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Akama, whether you have no desires. Akama sarvakamova, or you have all kinds of desires. Mokshakama, if your desires for it. Moksha, liberation alone. Whatever your desires might be, you should still, with firm devotion, worship the Supreme Person. That's what that verse says. So it doesn't matter. No one's trying to cast aspersions or judgment on you, whatever your desires may be. You should still connect yourself to God. So what he's saying there, it doesn't matter. You can still use the mantra. That's what he's saying in this case. The transcendental Kama Bija is inherent in the divine logos located in Goloka. In other words, it will deliver God to you. And the Kama Bija pervertedly reflected in worldly affairs satisfies all sorts of desires in this mundane world. Clear? What can you get with this mantra? Whatever you want. It's the supreme creative mantra. So you can get a mundane relationship. Maybe you can get a nice car out of this deal. I don't know. But ultimately, because it's so potent, so powerful and purifying, it will take you to the lotus feet of the Supreme Person. And then Saraswati says, O Brahma, do thou practice spiritual association by means of this mantra, then all your desires will be fulfilled. So then Brahma began to repeat the mantra in meditation. For a long time. Who knows what that means? A long time. Not 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening. But a long time. Fully absorbed in meditation. Brahma, being desirous of satisfying Govinda, practiced the cultural acts of this mantra for a long time. His meditation ran thus. There exists, this is what I wanted to get to. There exists a divine lotus flower of 1,000 petals, augmented by millions of filaments in the transcendental land of Goloka. Goloka is where Krishna is purported to live in the spiritual world. On its whorl, the middle, there exists a great divine throne on which is seated Sri Krishna, the form of eternal effulgence. Effulgence, you know what that means? Shining, brilliance. Of transcendental bliss, playing on his divine flute, resonant with the divine sound, with his lotus mouth. He is worshipped by his amorous milkmaids with their respective subjective portions and extensions, and also by his eternal energy embodying all mundane qualities. Then, Gayatri, the mother of the Vedas, being made manifest, that is, imparted by the divine sound of the flute of Sri Krishna, entered into the lotus mouth of Brahma. You got a ring there.
Yeah.
Entered into the lotus mouth of Brahma, born from himself through his 8 ear holes. Brahma's got 4 heads. One for each direction. So Gayatri entered into Brahma's ear holes through the sound of Krishna's flute, which he heard in his meditation. And then he heard Om Bhurva Vasva Tatsavitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat. The lotus-born Brahma, having received the Gayatri, sprung from the flute song of Sri Krishna, attained the status of the twice-born, having been initiated by the supreme primal preceptor, God himself. initiated into what? Into the mantra. The thing that they explain in India, in all the traditions in India, is that one must take initiation into a mantra. And then you are part of the chain, the unbroken chain, from guru to disciple, from guru to disciple, from guru to disciple, all the way down. So the knowledge was not lost or altered. It's passed down. Oral tradition. So how did he get initiated? By God in the heart. Is it possible for you to get initiated by God in the heart? I don't see why not. Nowadays, in Kali Yuga, I know lots of people who are initiated not by God in the heart, but by guru on the chair. Or, in other words, a physical person. That's fine. I got initiated by the guru. But I was a fortunate soul because the guru was a genuine guru, not a flim-flam man. So that's what we need to be careful of. I know lots of people were initiated by gurus who then the gurus fell down from their guru position. The guru, to be initiated means you get a mantra or you get a technique for meditation, you get something. Ultimately, the guru takes no disciples unless the guru is a liberated soul. Because the guru can deliver liberation, he can deliver you from the material world. That's the whole concept. That's what initiation means. Well, you know, you can't tangibly measure it. So you're going to have to judge by his behavior, by what he says, what he does, and who he is, or she. No one can decide it. I mean, we can't subject it to government stipulations. That's the problem.
Does a person not set themselves up as a guru? Or
yeah.
Does that happen?
They do. They set themselves up as a guru. And some of them might be legitimate, and many of them are not, which is my original point. That's why you have to be careful. The guru in exchange. According to Bhagavad Gita, there are two qualifications to become a disciple of a guru. One is humility. Is to be willing to be humble. Because you can't learn unless you're humble. And the second is to render service, is to offer some service. Service is payment. But the guru doesn't charge 300 euros for the mantra. It doesn't work like that. But some payment must be made because there's an exchange of energy. So generally, a disciple goes to the ashram with a guru and begins to serve. Just begins to serve. A year goes by. And all he does for the first year, he sweeps. He cleans. Something like that. That's the way it all was done. Maybe a year goes by, maybe 2 years goes by, and then the guru says, sit. Now I'll teach you.
There's a reason why they do that.
There's stories where they'll come to the ashram and they'll knock on the door and say, I wish to study at your feet. And the guru takes a look and says, go away, you fool. Get the hell out of here. Don't come back. Slam the door. It's a test.
So what about for people in the West where there aren't...
They don't do that to people in the West.
Yeah, but like, say, you know, I mean, surely in the East, obviously, the tradition of the ashrams and people going, but in the West, if people want to have a practice or a discipline or, you know, how, what's the, you know, with so many, you know, what's the word?
Falls
of people in the West, how do you...
Well, you can always practice yoga and meditation. I mean, you can learn that from lots of people. We're not talking about just learning a technique. We're talking more about people setting themselves up as authority. And you better do what I say, and this is how much it's going to cost you. And that's the thing I was warning you about. Not so much about doing yoga and meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, you know, a lot of it too, if you listen to your heart, then you'll find out. You know, I myself always have felt blessed that I've been able to do that. Because I've been in situations, some very intense situations, high pressure situations, where, you know, I've gone against the grain. I've done this lots of times in my life. And there was great pressure brought to bear to get me to fall into line. You know, and it didn't work. Because I could see what would happen. I knew what was going to happen. I could see it. And that's what happened later on. So I just get out of it. I just get myself out before all this stuff happened.
In a way, you're lucky, aren't you? It's because you have that discerning mind to love what people...
Who don't, or who will knuckle under the pressure.
Yeah.
You know? So, you have to just use your heart.
Yeah.
That's the best answer.
Mm.
And don't be duped. Just because everybody else is saying one thing and you feel your intuition is telling you it's something different, don't believe all them. That's foolishness. And they may all say it's a great idea. That doesn't mean it is. You know, all the Americans are all finding out that investing in the stock market wasn't such a great idea.
Not only Americans.
They've lost millions and millions and millions in the last few days. You know, that's just the beginning. Okay. Enlightened by the recollection of that Gayatri mantra embodying the Vedas, Brahma became acquainted with the expanse of the ocean of truth. So if you work with the mantra, I've given different mantras to you at different times. Not so much to confuse you. I think, like our friend Martin used to say, why do you keep giving us all these mantras? Can't we just... He wanted it all simplified, but, you know, I like to give a bunch and then see what you like. You find out what works for you, what you gravitate to. Because some will work better than others. And some of them you will find that you chanted this mantra in a previous lifetime. And when you get efficacy from a mantra, immediately you start chanting it. Jan chants the Gayatri and the sun comes out. Or the Surya mantra. You know. And that's saying something because she lives in Ireland. And that's no small potatoes, you know. So, you know, that way it gives you a variety to choose from. When you stay focused on a mantra, in Brahma's case, he became acquainted with the expanse of the ocean of truth. Then he worshipped Sri Krishna, the essence of all the Vedas, with this hymn. Now we get to the Chintamani prakara sadmasu kalpavriksha lakshavriteshu surabhi abhipalayantam lakshmi sahasra shat sambrama sevimanam govindam adipurusham tam aham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the original Lord, the first progenitor, who tends the cows, yielding all desire, in abodes built with spiritual gems, surrounded by millions of desire trees, always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis, or goddesses of fortune. That was the first glimpse. That's what he saw in the spiritual realm. He saw God enjoying himself. Flute. One goddess of fortune, hundreds of thousands. It's like, I don't know. It's like, in a breath, they shimmer into manifestation and you see them everywhere. And then the breath is withdrawn and then the sky returns. And it's so it appears and it fades away and it appears. And they're everywhere and nowhere all at the same time. They're fully manifest and non-manifest depending on your moment's vision. He's tending the cows. Why would he be tending cows? There's chapters and chapters in the Mahabharata that says that the highest abodes are the abodes where cows live. Which is a hard one maybe to understand, because cows are gentle beings and they are the essence of motherhood. They're nurturing beings. They give milk, which is life. And their urine and their stool is antiseptic. It can be used for manure. And when we were in India visiting an Ayurvedic place where they took care of their own cows. They don't call it raising cows. They certainly don't call it growing animals. They call it protecting, taking care of. And there were 99 cures of 99 kinds of diseases that could be cured with using the stool and urine of the cow. When the cow stool is dropped on the road, you see the people scoop it up and they make it into little brown patties and they slap it on the side of the hut and it dries in the sun. When it's fully dry, they take it and they use it for fuel. It burns.
Yeah.
Burns. And they cook their food. It does everything. There's no product of the cow that does not have benefit. So she's the supreme mother. So that's who he looks after, the cows. God serves the cows. Everybody serves God. God serves the cows. Now try to wrap your mind around that. But the cows are not ordinary cows. They are Surabhi cows. And what it tells you a little later on here is ordinary cows, when milked, give milk. Sounds good. But spiritual cows, when milked, give whatever you want. Any desire. So that's why they are called Surabhi cows. And yielding all desires. That's what it says. In abodes built with spiritual gems. We were reading the other day. Was it here we talked about? Yeah, I think it was. Every grain of sand, every grain was a gemstone.
Gajendra,
when we read about Gajendra, elephant, Gajendra Mokshana. So, gems are everywhere. It's not silicon, it's corundum. Mm-hmm. Corundum is what? Corundum is the element that's the basis of sapphire, ruby. Surrounded by millions of desired trees. The trees will give fruit. Whatever fruit tree it is, then you eat the fruit, or some will have flowers. In the spiritual world, there's no such thing as a tree without fruit or flowers. But they don't give fruit and flowers like they normally would here. The fruit and flowers gives the fulfillment of desire. Whatever desire. All desires are fulfilled instantly in the spiritual world.
You get
what? Yeah, if you want. Always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis or gopis. Purport. By the word Chintamani is meant transcendental gem. Chintamani. M-A-N-I, money is gem. Chintamani is a touchstone. Just as Maya builds this material universe with the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, so the spiritual potency, or chit potency, sat, chit, ananda, chit potency is consciousness. Has built the spiritual world of transcendental gems. So it's spiritual stuff. Substance.
Consciousness makes the spiritual world spiritual.
Yeah. Because whatever you
think of
it, right. Whatever seed, thought, form you put into it, immediately it manifests. The Chintamani
does not make the material world flow.
Yeah, but it does it through the elements. It goes through the five elements. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the spiritual world, we don't need the five elements. Mm-hmm. Yes, but it's perverted reflection here. Or they use the term perverted reflection. It's a reflection. Mm-hmm. Perverted means it's not pure. The Chintamani, which serves as the material in the building of the abode of the Supreme Lord, is a far rarer and more agreeable substance than the Philosopher's Stone. What do they mean by the Philosopher's Stone? That which could transform base metal into gold according to the alchemical process. So that was the catalyst, Philosopher's Stone. The purpose tree yields only the fruits of piety, wealth, fulfillment of desire, and liberation. But the purpose trees in the abode of Krishna, or desire trees in the abode of Krishna, bestow innumerable fruits in the shape of divine love. Kamadhenus, or cows yielding the fulfillment of desire, give milk when they are milked. But the Kamadhenus, or desire cows of Goloka, pour forth oceans of milk in the shape of the fountain of love, showering transcendental bliss that does away with the hunger and thirst of the devotees. So, bliss wipes out the hunger and thirst. It overwhelms it. The word Laksha and Sahasrashata signifies endless numbers.
So just going back to what you said there about bliss, what did you say, transforms or?
Yeah, the hunger and thirst that an entity would normally feel would be neutralized by the experience of bliss. So one would lose one's hunger, not by feeding the hunger or feeding the thirst, but by being overwhelmed with bliss. So the hunger would shrink down to insignificance. Yeah. Venum kvanantam aravinda dalayataksham barhavitam samasitam buddhasundarangam kandarpakotikamaniya vishesha shobham govindam adipurusham dhammaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the original Lord, who is adept in playing upon his flute. With blooming eyes like lotus petals, head bedecked with a peacock feather, with the figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. He's called Madana Mohan. Name for Cupid is Madana. Madana means enmaddened, mad, crazy, because Cupid drives you mad with desire. You become enmaddened by Mr. Madana. But God is Madana Mohana. One who creates illusion for Cupid. He enamors even Cupid. Can't think straight because of the influence of Krishna. Charming one Cupid, millions of Cupids. So we are under the spell of Cupid in this material world. All you got to do is have somebody that shows up who's got a collection of the qualities that drive you wild, and I guarantee you, you won't be able to think straight. And each of us has a different collection of these qualities, and whatever those energies might be. Women, it's a little more abstract, and with men it's very visual. With women it's not always so visual, you know, but whatever, you know what I'm talking about. And we are so driven by that influence. So can you imagine that Goddess Krishna in this form is so attractive that even Cupid, who's used to running around bewildering everybody, becomes completely bewildered himself by the beauty of God. That's what they're saying there. So if you can try to imagine that, not one Cupid, millions of Cupids, you know. I worship Govinda. Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti pashyanti panti kalayanti chiram jaganti ananda chinmaya sad ujvala vigrahasya govindam adipurusham tamaham vajami. I worship Govinda, the original Lord, whose transcendental form is full of bliss, truth, substantiality, and is thus full of the most dazzling splendor. Each of the limbs of that transcendental figure possesses in himself the full-fledged functions of all the organs, and eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and material. your eyes can do what? See. Your nose can smell. Your skin can touch. Your tongue can taste. Your ears can hear. But God can see with his ears, can taste with his skin. All of his senses can do all of the jobs, all of the time. When you can do that, let me know. I will be over and I'll be at your feet, bowing down, proclaiming you the next avatar. And up until that time, pronouns. Okay. It's very nice, but I'm losing my audience.
I'm forgotten
to play.
So we'll cut it short. Questions, comments?
I was just going to ask you if you would go through the pronunciation of the Pisma.
Yeah, you can do that. You ready? Get it out there. Everybody got one?
Which one? Pisma.
The peace invocation. Here you go. Om Tatsyam Yor Avrani Mahe Gatum Yagyaya Gatum Yagyapataye Daivi Swastirastuna Swastir Manushevya. I don't think I hit all the notes right, but Urvam jagatu beshajam shamno astu dvipadehe sham shatushpade om shanti shanti shanti. Okay. Om tachcham yor avrini mahe. You ready? Om Tach Cham Yor Avrani Mahe. Om Tach Cham Yor Avrani Mahe. Om Tach Cham Yor Avrani Mahe. Okay, I'll do the next one. Gatum Yagyaya Gatum Yagyapataye Gatum Yagyaya Gatum Yagyapataye Gatum Yagyaya Gatum Yagyapataye Gatum Yagyaya Gatum Yagyapataye Daivi Swas Dir astuna. Sing it, hon.
Daivi swasti astuna.
That's it. Daivi swasti astuna. Daivi swasti astuna. Daivi swasti astuna. Daivi swasti astuna. Swastir manushyebhyaha Swastir manushyebhyaha Swastir manushyebhyaha Urdvam jagatu beshajam. Is that right?
Urdvam, yeah.
Urdvam jagatu beshajam Urdvam jagatu beshajam Urdvam jagatu beshajam Shamno astu dvipadehe Shamno astu dvipadehe Shamno astu dvipadehe
Dvipadehe
Dve, or dwe. Dve means two. Dvipade means 2 feet, 2 foot. Sham no astu dvipade. Sham chatush pade. 4 footed. Sham chatush pade. Sham chatush pade. Om shanti shanti shanti. Now, somebody, would you read that translation, please?
May I?
Yep.
We worship and praise the Supreme Lord for the welfare of all beings. May all miseries and shortcomings leave us forever, so that we may always sing for the Lord during the sacred fire ceremony. May all medicinal herbs grow in potency, so that all diseases may be cured. May God bring peace upon us. May all the two-legged creatures be happy. May all the four-legged creatures also be happy. May there be peace in the hearts of all beings. In all realms, Om, peace, peace, peace.
Yeah.
It's the beginning to something else.
It's the beginning to the Purusha Sukta. Which is the Purusha Sukta?
Yeah. We should try and learn that.
Well, first let's play this.
Okay.
Satyam yoravrinimahe gatum yagyaya gatum yagyapataye daivi swastirastunah swastir manushebhyah urvam jagatu veshajam shamno astu dvipade shang chatushpade om shanti shanti shanti. Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om Tatscham Yoravranimahe Gatum Yagyaya Gatum Yagyapataye Daivi Sastirastanaha Sastir Manushebhyaha Urdvam Jagatu Beshajam Shamno Astu Dvipadehe Sham Chatushpade Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Now, this is on the website. If you go to podcast right at the bottom, I think it is. Purusha. October's
monthly
planner is there.
Shri
Gurubhyo Namaha
Hari Om. Shem chatushpade Om Sham Tisham Tisham Dehi Sahasra Sirusha Purushaha Sahasra Akshat Sahasra Par.
This is the Purusha Sukta. Pratishtat Dashangulam Purusha Evedam Sarvam Yad-bhūtam yad-chibhavyam tirohati This is a prayer to Vishnu, a creator of the universe. And it goes through all the different beings in the universe and how the universe is the body of God.
Tasmāt virāda jāyata
then he did this, then this happened, and then he created these, and from that came that. It's wrong though, it was actually just the Big Bang. And then it all settled into place. The Brahmins. The priests.
Oh, and you listen. Try again. You taped it.
No. I bought a CD.
Oh, you can buy CDs.
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Did you buy them in India, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I bought them. You know.
Over time. It's very good. It's been nice to learn John.
Yeah, I got 5,000 songs in my iPod.
The great times in the past.
Wouldn't
you just
say,
oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's
how I am.
That's why I learned very
different. Pardon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got those two. I got some of those two. Though. Okay, October monthly planners there. Om Tat Sat.